UK Wine Show, show number 54. Sparkling wine closures with Tony Jordan, CEO of Greenpoint, Cape Mentel and Cloudy Bay. G'day! Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 54 for the 8th of June 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're featuring Tony Jordan, the CEO of Cloudy Bay, Greenpoint, and Cape Mentel. And we're going to be talking to him about their recent release of Greenpoint wines under the Crown Seal. Not only does Tony believe in the Crown Seal as a solution to the cork problems associated with bubbly wines, but he has a PhD in chemical physics, so understands the problems well. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, New Zealand hits back at criticism over their carbon footprint and how British consumers aren't bothered about organic or fair trade wine. But first, the EU will spend more of its budget on promoting its wines abroad and less on subsidies to grub up vines, with new wine reform legislation that comes into effect on the 4th of July. The EU is still planning to pull out 200,000 hectares of vines to help reduce their wine lake, but this is half what was originally anticipated and will be on a voluntary basis. Substantial funds will be redirected into the marketing and promotion of EU wines outside of Europe. Along with simpler labelling, this is seen as the best way to strengthen the reputation of European wine and fight off new world competition. Next up, New Zealand has hit back at the Times newspaper, which encouraged readers to buy French rather than Kiwi wine in an article on how to shrink your carbon footprint. The trade association New Zealand Wine Growers said the report was inaccurate and only focused on the transportation of wine, ignoring waste management and sustainable production. Neither did it take into account the carbon cost of European subsidies for the production and distillation of billions of litres of unwanted wines. Essentially, New Zealand wines are exported by sea to the UK. This mode uses less carbon emissions per kilometre than by air or road. The Times carbon footprint comparison was calculated using the distance between Auckland and London of about 18,000 kilometres and between Bordeaux and London of 742 kilometres. On this basis, the French wine would have a rating of 808 kilograms of CO2, while the New Zealand wine would be higher at 1,193 kilograms. However, when you compare both with a bottle of wine from Chianti, the Italian wine clocks up an even worse rating of 1,581 kilograms of CO2, which highlights the huge variation in emissions between road and sea. Perhaps we should all just stay at home and drink English wine if only there was enough of it to go round. And finally this week, a new report says British consumers aren't bothered about whether their wine is organic or fair trade. While awareness is high at over 60%, this isn't being translated into purchases in the same way as with organic and fair trade food. In fact, only about 10% claim to have bought organic or fair trade wine in the past 3 months. The main reason seems to be its limited availability, with respondents saying they don't see organic wines when they are shopping. I'd agree that in the supermarket it is hard to pick out these wines. You really need to hunt for them. But if you do want to find them, the Co-op probably has the biggest range of fair trade wines, and it's worth checking out Vintage Roots online for organic wines. That's all in the news this week, but 10 years ago, in June 1997, a wine was launched with a less than enticing name of Gnat's Piss. It was designed to appeal to young, upwardly mobile partygoers with some prior knowledge of quality wines. Needless to say, we've searched for it on the internet and it is no longer available. For more details on this week's stories, check out the news homepage on our website, 3050.co.uk. That's it from me this week. Back over to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. As a Kiwi, I do feel a bit under threat from some of the nonsense that's coming out of the media in the UK on carbon footprints at the moment. Based on the logic from the Times newspaper, we should buy in the following order: England, France, Germany, New Zealand, Spain, and Italy. After all, ships are hugely more efficient compared to trucks. I think if the wine trade went to use rail as a method of getting wine from point A to point B, then there might be a better argument for this. But when you've got European wines being trucked around versus wine that's being shipped around from Chile, New Zealand, Australia, what you're finding is their carbon footprint, there's very little difference in it compared to other ways of improving your carbon footprint. So I'm not a big fan of that. I think if wine was ever to be flown around the world, there's a fairly good argument, but given that it's shipped, which is pretty efficient, I think that was a load of nonsense coming out of the Times. Next up, we have the interview with Tony Jordan from Greenpoint. Hi, I'm here with Tony Jordan, CEO of
Cape Mantel,
Cape Mantel,
and Greenpoint.
So a man with quite a few good wines under his belt. You've got a PhD in physical chemistry.
Yes, an area of physical chemistry, chemical physics. Let's not go into that.
Okay, let's not. What we're going to be talking about today is Crown Seal. You guys have been playing around with Crown Seal for a while, but you've just released a lot of your sparkling wines under that from Greenpoint.
That's right. The history is recent. We first sealed one of our sparklings in Australia. That was our ZD of 2000 under Crown Seal in 2003. Interestingly, it appears that we're the first in the world to do that, so I suppose you can call it an innovation.
Sure, but sparkling wines spend a lot of time under Crown Seal, don't they?
They do, yes. In the tirage process, that's the second fermentation in bottle, is all under Crown Seal. So a wine ferments under the crown and then is yeast-aged under the crown. And some of our long yeast-aged wines are there for about 8 or 9 years. So similarly in Champagne, of course.
Yeah, sure. So what was the reason you decided to go for Crown Seal?
Exactly the same reason that a lot of people have moved to screw caps for still wine, that there continues to be a problem of cork taints in sparkling wine. And there continues to be a problem of uneven aging under cork in sparkling wine. So it's not just a still wine issue, it's a sparkling wine issue. And having seen the uptake and acceptance by consumers of screw caps, we just said, look, we've got to do something with sparkling. And the Crown Seal, because we already use it in the tirage process, is the obvious reseal instead of cork.
What sort of cork taint is it? Is it TCA or is it primarily TCA? Or
primarily, when you're looking at cork taints with your nose, I think, yes, the main cork taint is trichloroanisole. There is another one, the pyrazine compound, DMDP, which is also recognised as a cork taint problem.
Okay, you were talking before the interview, you also had some problems with glue.
Oh, yes, I think probably these problems are lesser these days, but if you look at... let's call it a sparkling wine or champagne cork, it comprises two parts. The upper part that's nearest the top of the bottle is an agglomerate that's glued together. Yep. The lower part of a champagne cork is then two cork, pure cork discs. Well, we've had problems, and one year we had a severe problem with taint from the glue that was used in the agglomerate. But I think the glues are getting better. But, it's still a potential problem.
Why did you go for a Crown Seal as opposed to maybe a screw cap then?
Well, the champagne bottle is designed to take a Crown Seal for the tirage process. Therefore, it was obvious to use that. I'm not sure how we would use a screw cap on a sparkling wine. I dare say it's possible, but... we want a tirage under crown because the actual process of disgorging relies on the machinery flipping off the crown and then the pressure in the bottle expelling the ice plug that contains the yeast. Now, that's going to be a little hard to do with a screw cap.
Yeah, sure. So all your equipment was geared up for it, so it was easy to
go. There was zero investment in new equipment.
Oh, that's always good, isn't it?
That is good.
So no new equipment means if it does take off, it could go quite well.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I suppose you could argue that if there's resistance to the idea that we haven't got redundant equipment.
You've got a few years of playing with Crown Seals. Do you find it works for you?
Yes. I mean, when we first did it in Australia, we did it cautiously. We put it on one of our very top wines. That was our Blanc de Blanc ZD. Mm-hmm. Unlike screw caps, what happened with screw caps was that a number of high-end winemakers started using them. Then it was very rapidly taken up by the big companies on their more mass-market wines. That hasn't happened with the Crown Seal. I think the big companies are a little concerned that the consumer of sparkling wine is going to see this as not an appropriate seal. But anyway, what happened with the ZD in Australia is that the press and the trade really took to it. They understood why we were doing it. Of course, we used a stainless steel crown, and we adapted our package to a very contemporary package to match the crown. It looks pretty good.
Yep.
And so the, I guess you call them the gatekeepers, took it up, and that then fed through to the consumers. So at least amongst informed consumers, there's quite a good acceptance of it. But then there's another story. We, to our surprise, with our Japanese importer, they saw what we were doing in Australia and said, oh, we'd like you to put your vintage Brut and your non-vintage under crown. We said, well, that's surprising. We thought Japan was a very conservative wine market.
Sure.
But they said, no, no, we want to do it. We want to try it. And it's been a roaring success. We now sell a lot more sparkling in Japan than we do in the UK, for instance. And we really think that we've misread that market. We think there's a younger consumer coming into that market that is looking for innovation, is looking for things that are modern and contemporary. I suppose if you look at fashion in Japan, it's quite...
very conscious.
Well, it's just very interesting.
One of the interesting things, you know, you get it here in the press about issues associated with the lack of oxygen seeping into the wine, you get reductive issues, or people talk about reductive issues. How does the crown seal perform for that?
Well, talking screw caps as well as crown seals, I mean, we've been using screw caps at Cloudy Bay, Cape Mentelle and Greenpoint now for several years. Our approach is very careful in the wine preparation prior to bottling. We really take a good look at the wine over a long period of time, repeated tastings. If need be, there's low-level copper finings done. And to date, we have not had a problem of reduction or developed sulfides under our screw caps.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying that can't happen because, you know, being a PhD chemist, I've had a good look at the chemistry and I recognize that theoretically it's possible. Mm-hmm. Now, look, under screw cap, if a particular wine or winery finds it gets repeated problems, even in spite of good preparation of the wines, then there are screw caps that are available that allow more oxygen in. They allow a level of oxygen entry similar to the average core. Those screw caps are now available. We don't want to use them because we like the way our wines age under the tin foil screw caps.
When you're talking about tin foil, you mean the wadding that goes on the inside?
The wadding on the inside of the screw cap contains several layers of polymer, but one layer between the polymer is tin foil, and it's the tin foil, or the foil as they call it, that is particularly impermeable to oxygen.
Yeah.
Now, for crown seals, at the moment we can't get any waddings that contain tin foil. There are multiple polymer waddings. The research that's been done by our parent company, Moët & Chandon, shows the one we're using is very, very low permeability to CO2 and oxygen. We also have now the experience of 4 years of wine under these crown seals, and we've watched the development of our 2000ZD, and that's been excellent. It's just been gentle and heading in the normal direction. So we're very confident about these seals.
How long does the ZD spend sitting on its yeast before it's disgorged?
3 years. Minimum 2.5, but we like to get it out to 3 years yeast.
So your 2000 spent 3 years under crown first.
That's why we released it in the end of 2003. Yeah,
so you're looking at, what, still 7 years?
Yeah, so, well, we're looking at 4 years since we did that. So that's why I talk about 4 years of experience.
Ah, okay, I'm with you. And do you think other people will take this closure up?
Well, they have. In Australia, there's about 5 or 6 companies now using these closures on their sparkling wines, and hey, it's the other end of things, but have a look at some of the Proseccos now that are coming out under crown seal. So that could be the thing that really causes the takeoff in these higher end Chardonnay Pinot Noir sparkling wines, the fact that Italian Prosecco are now appearing under crown seal.
Prosecco is also went into cans as well a while ago.
Yeah, I know, but at least it's getting the consumer, the everyday consumer, used to seeing them. Once they see them and they say, hey, this is okay, then we might find some of the big companies like Lindemann's or Orlando's or something will put their Chardonnay Pinot, let's call them the 5-6 pound sparklings under crown.
Do you think LVMH will consider it, given they're the parent company?
Yeah, I haven't spoken to them about it, but I suspect that in Champagne they'd have to change the appellation to go under Crown, because these appellations, it's the same in Italy, putting even with screw cap. In some appellations, the appellation specifies cork.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that's the case in Champagne. So, you know what the French are like. They're loath to change their appellation because so much is built around the fact that this has been in existence for a long time, and it is a guarantee of, in some ways, quality and history.
Just one last question, Tony. You were talking about the O2 permeability and the wine's aging. You've got 4 years of experience. How are you finding the wine's age?
Well, our ZD we also put under cork, and okay, sure, under cork, if you open a 5 or 6 of them, they're all a little different to each other because that's one of the properties of cork. So under the crowns, we're getting quite uniform aging and not that dissimilar to the aging under the average cork.
Okay, so you're quite happy with how things
are? Very happy. No, that's why we're expanding the range of wines in the UK under crown. So we've now got our Vintage Brut Rosé, our non-vintage Rosé, and our non-vintage Brut as well. So that's 5 wines here under Crown.
Excellent. I think we'll wrap it up there, Tony. Thank you very much for your time.
It's a pleasure.
Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Tony. From my point of view, it will be interesting to see how it takes off, if it does take off. I must admit, whilst I still get a reasonable amount of corked wine from still wines, I can't recall the last time I had a corked sparkling wine. Perhaps the quality of corks are higher than those normal wine, but I know I open about 8 bottles of still for every bottle of fizz, so it could be something to do with that. Maybe I'm just not opening enough regularly. But even so, I have noted in the past that I don't get that many bottles of fizz corked, so maybe it isn't as big an issue as Tony thinks it is. If you've got an opinion on this, I'd like to hear from you, particularly if you experience regular corked wines, or like me, you hardly ever notice the corked wines from fizz. My email address is chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk. This week's last word comes from Paulo Parado in Brazil. He listens to the show along with Great Radio and Cellarat. So he reckons he enjoys the rush hour home so he can listen to a show, which I think is slightly nuts, but good on you, mate. He also thinks I should cover some Brazilian wines, and he reckons they're producing some good examples, if slightly pricey. To be honest, I've tried a few bottles of Brazil and Uruguay in the past and have been pleasantly surprised, although partly because I think my expectations were quite low, they certainly did open my eyes to the possibilities. And I would like to cover some wines from those regions. I did go looking around for some wines from Brazil and Uruguay at the beginning of the year. We were putting together America's Tasting for 3050, our wine testing company. But the only thing I could find was some very good Mexican wines. But if anybody knows of a producer coming to London from Brazil or Uruguay or somewhere through that Central America, then please get them to be in touch with me. I'd love to have a chat with them. And my contact details are, again, chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk. So until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.